A Little Private Hanging. It was a highly exclusive affair. No carnival atmosphere, no crowds of baying commoners, certainly no tittering whores in attendance. A small cobbled yard behind the House of Questions, rather than one of the wide public squares in the heart of the city. The tone was sombre, one would have to say, but for also to lift the mood seemed a lot to ask. "I bloody hate hangings," he said, frowning up at the scaffold. The innovations had all been rolled back. No pulleys, no cranes, no machinery. They were gone the way of Rizenau and Judge and the Commons Round and the People's Inspectorate and the Great Change as a whole. Just the gallows and a rope and a trapdoor and a lever to open it. And a prisoner to hang, of course. It would be a hell of a poor occasion without one of those. A gentle breeze washed through the yard, hardly any smoke on the air, and it tasted sweet. Perhaps your last breaths always do. Also wasn't afraid, not even watching the noose gently swing. But then he'd always had a habit of being brave at the least appropriate times. He had blundered blindly from one mistake to another, buffeted by forces he had barely perceived, let alone understood, like a blind man in a prize fight. There was so much he had failed at, so often he had disappointed. This, at least, he was determined to do well. "No point hanging around, is there?" he said, and he left the guards behind him and trotted jauntily up the steps. He had tried to do the right thing, he thought, in his own rather ineffectual way, but it was strange how circumstances would rarely let one be the hero, however much one might want to be, however much one might deserve to be. Still, no doubt everyone thinks they are entitled to the prizes. The young lion had no doubts about it, that was clear. He still looked somewhat leonine, if you squinted, but young had become a hell of a stretch. There was a premature greying to that golden hair and beard, a leaching out of all his colour. He had an expression of well-earned satisfaction as he watched Orso climb the scaffold. One might have liked to blame it on a total lack of empathy or imagination. But the truth, as everyone knew, was that Leo Dan Brock knew exactly how it felt to face the noose. Some people, Orso supposed, can never forgive being forgiven. The Lord Regent glanced sideways at his wife, like a winning squares player at their beaten opponent. But Savine did not meet his eye. Most observers might have thought she was relaxed, a wealthy patron in her box at the theatre, but also knew her better than that. Better than anyone, maybe. He saw the muscles of her jaw clenching, her knuckles white with pressure on the rail. He knew at a glance this was as much of a shock to her as to anyone. He smiled at her, and she smiled back. A small smile at the corner of her mouth, but he saw it. He knew what it meant. Perhaps every person is alone in the end. But in that moment, it seemed they understood each other, forgave each other, loved each other still, perhaps even now. He did not think he had ever let her down, not in any of the ways that really mattered. That was something. Then she swallowed and looked to the ground, and the moment was gone. Orso doubted he would share a profound last glance with any of the other attendees. Lords Isher and Huygen looked smug, but if you let other people's smugness make you angry, you'll be angry all the time. Brock's men Durand and Glarwood looked sombre. Decent enough people, probably, if they'd had a different master. You find decent people on every side, after all, as Orso's father had been fond of saying. It was a surprise to see Celeste Dan Huygen, more soberly dressed than had been her habit, but some people seem always to float to the top. Then there was a bony man Orso only vaguely recognised, wearing Archlector's white. And there was Kernsbick, looking slightly ill, and that fellow with the big jowls, and that fellow with the pointy nose who had once been in the King's Own. What the hell were their names? It had been impossible to predict even 6 months ago, But these, it seemed, were the winners, those who would steer the Union into the future, each with their talents, their rivalries, their ambitions, probably no worse than his own closed council had been, probably no better than the closed councils of his father, of King Guslaf, King Casimir, King Arnold, and all the way back to the first Harod, namesake of the new.
"I must admit, it's a rather disappointing turnout," called Orso. "Still, I understand. I've always hated hangings myself, and here's one I'm particularly reluctant to attend."
He barked a laugh. No one joined him.
"Dear me, who would have thought I'd be the only one to keep my sense of humour?"
Tricky, with his hands tied, but he managed to nudge the executioner in the ribs with his elbow.
"Lovely day for it, at least."
He squinted up at the blue sky, the few shreds of cloud slowly shifting.
"Looks like it'll be a fine summer."
It made him terribly sad, suddenly, to think he wouldn't see it. He covered it up with a chuckle.
"For you, at least."
The executioner, somewhat apologetically, offered him a hood.
"Thank you, but no. I've attended a few of these things. Let's not pretend that's for my benefit."
Damn, he wanted to scratch his nose, but his hands were tied behind his back. He wriggled it a little, but that only made it worse. Ridiculous, to die with an itchy nose. He raised his brows significantly.
"I don't suppose you could just..."
The executioner squinted through his eye holes as he gently scratched the rim of Orso's nostril.
"Ah, that's good. A little to the right. Perfect."
The man reached up, pulled down the noose, secured it around Orso's neck.
"Nice and tight, there's a good fellow."
Orso winked at him.
"So hard to find a good valet these days."
The young lion looked somewhat nettled.
"Have you anything to say?" he snapped. "Too much, usually," called Orso. "But I'll try to keep it brief. I know you have a country to ruin."
The trapdoor creaked under his feet as he stepped forwards.
"Don't grieve for me."
He glanced about the audience, brows high.
"No? No one? The truth is, at my best, I've been a barely adequate king. My father's son, I dare say. Though allow me to take just a little pride in my victory against the odds at Stauffenbeck. Unfortunate timing, to take the throne with not one but two bloody revolts on the way. But that's no excuse, really. There's always something horrible on the way, after all. You'll see. Not that I bear any of you ill will, you understand. Ill will is too heavy a thing to carry through life, let alone up onto a scaffold, and it's useless in a fight in any case.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the executioner wrap his hands around the lever.
"Well, I think I'm being given the signal to finish up. To my sister Savine."
He grinned over at her, the way he used to when they were together in Swarbrick's office, when he had just thought of the best joke, one he knew she would love. That was how he wanted her to think of him, as he had been, as they had been.
"I take some comfort in knowing you'll be a far better ruler than I ever was. We have had our differences, but you remain the woman I most admire, and, let's be honest, the only one I've ever loved."
He was gratified to see a tear slide down her cheek. It was not as if it had all been worth it, for one tear, but it was something. He grinned at the Lord Regent.
"To her husband, Leo Dan Brock, I can only say, how's your leg?"
He gave one last chuckle, and it became a sigh.
"Let's get on with it," he said.
There was a clatter as the trap dropped open.